Welcome to the European Hockey Federation podcast, in conversation with the biggest names in hockey, generating insight and engagement around coaching, officiating and play, powered by Coach Logic and supported by IFEH Academy, presented by Jack Rolf, the founder of a coaching lab. For this episode, we spoke with Santiago Freaks about his plans for being at the helm of a historic Amsterdam Hockey and Bandy Club. Over to Jack.
Coaches, good morning, good evening, afternoon, depending where you're joining us from. And as ever, fantastic to have you with us. Grateful for your time and your energy. And as ever, please do drop your questions below in the chat box as we progress through. The webinar will be up on Coach Logic afterwards, so if you do have to leave or you miss anything, you know, feel free to go and take some notes and head back there. It's a great honour to have Santi Fresher with us, one of the nicest, most smiley people in world hockey. Santi, thanks for your time. It's awesome to have you with us.
Thanks for the opportunity to, as a player, I always had the feeling that you are around people. And as a coach, there's a big difference because you have a lot of moments of loneliness, trying to think what's better for the team, trying to think what's better for the player. And these moments are, of course, you share a lot with your staff, but you have more about alone moments. Yeah. And it's really nice to start this week with the 45 people around you.
Santi, I'd like to start with a story first that I think is something from me that you did for me last year. It says, I think, a lot about you as a person, as a coach, and, you know, to see inside the environment that you create for your players. Well, I was walking down Amsterdam Clubhouse and we saw each other. We shook hands and we greeted each other and whatever. And you said, what are you doing on Tuesday night? And I said, I'm not doing much. And you invited me to your training with the boys. You said, come and be my assistant trainer for the evening and to come and see inside. And, you know, you gave me all your time and energy and everything was fantastic. And I think that says a lot about what you're trying to do for your players, but also the people that you interact with, which says a lot about, you know, where you're going and where you're heading. We spoke about this previously, Santi, but what is the makeup of yourself, your personality? What do you, as you as a coach, how would you describe yourself?
Well, me as a coach, as you, as everyone here in this morning can agree that we as a person, but mainly as a coach, because we are doing things, you change a lot. I mean, I start coaching, assistant coaching, having a really concrete responsibility, which was behavior on the D with the Dutch girls. And from there, I became a head coach. And nowadays, maybe I have to name two things, what I try to do. As open as possible to my player, what my thoughts are. So that means checking with them whether what I'm thinking is the reality on the team. Yeah, so I really trying to be as open as possible with that, about the doubts I'm having, about the belief I have, how we have to play. So that they are engaged in how we have to play. And second of all, also I really try to make as concrete as possible. Yeah, I'm as a person, maybe I'm just more like freedom and intuition and spontaneously of the match. This is how I am. But I realize that space is good, but from a certain degree of a space. Yeah, you have to fill the space, but when everything is a space, it creates chaos. And that is something that that everyone is, I think, as a coach is looking for the right balance. And me as a coach and with my team, because you are not alone here, with your team, you have to find the balance whether you bring enough instructions, enough game plan, enough indications, and enough freedom to perform.
And Samsi, do you think this has been an influence from being a player at the top level for countless years and having been played under a lot of coaches? Has this then influenced where you deliver the way you enter?
I think as a coach, you can go to seminars, you can get a certificate, you can learn a lot of things, but actually, that is one way, like the formal way, but always what you get from others. In my career, coaches like Maurits Hendricks, Dani Martin from Spain, Sjoerd Marijnen, Alison Annen, Ton Sidman, those have been in my path. And I've been taking a lot from them. And also one of the things that that we were talking last week is that me as a player, I had 8 operations, which mean 8 recoveries, which means that I had not the half, but a lot of time I had to be not on the pitch. You know, I started playing internationally when I was 16. And I stopped when I was 22. So our, what is 15, 16 years actively, which at least 3-4 years, I was just not playing. So I become a lot of times in a role which was not active with the stick, but I had to do something that influenced the team. About leadership, about helping others, about helping my coach to analyze, or just discussing some part of the game or team process. So here is where, without knowing, I start becoming a coach, becoming a trainer, while I was playing.
And I was just going to ask that, Sandra. I suppose you've just asked it in a way. Was that intentional? You know, in those 8 recoveries, did you know you was picking up the knowledge to help you become a coach in the future? Or was it just you so in the mode that it just...
No. I was so in the mode. It was totally unconsciously. Look, for me as a coach, the main motivation, what I look as a coach, of course, I find hockey great, but the main motivation is to give something back. Yeah, this I have it. When we create a project in India with Andreu Enric, it was to give the possibility to children in India to have what we had. The possibility to play a sport, to meet people, to make friends, to develop as a human being, everything. The same happens with me. I mean, I did my studies in economy and everything. I had already a job. When I had the opportunity to say, okay, do I want to go to the office 5 times a week, 8 hours a day at least, or I want to spend my time with motivated and committed people towards the same goal in a hockey pitch? For me, it was easy to choose. But it was not at that moment that when I was 18, I want to be a hockey coach, not at all. But also when I was in athletic in Spain, where I was grow up and start as a player, or in Amsterdam, I would always coach or train youth teams, not because I want to become a coach, not because I wanted I don't know, make a career, just because to give them back the opportunity I had, to give them back. Okay, nowadays I had a great coaches, Alison or Maurits or Short or whatever, and I can learn from them. Yeah, let's give the chance to the younger generation to learn from me. What I have, I don't know what I have, but just share it. And this is actually my essentially motivation drive as a coach, to give them back.
And Santi, how would you describe a Santi Fresher team? How would they play? What would there be their behaviors and their attributes? As the head coach, you're working with them.
Now that what I say about being open, so me as a player, I was too fanatic, too much. So what I would like to see also this I don't know if it's in English a good word, fanatism, to really really engage in the game, but that engagement that you are also connected to your teammate, not that engagement that you forget that you have teammates. That's what happens a lot to me. Me, the ball and goal, that was all my world. I have to learn to connect, you know. And this is actually what I really want a team who is engaged in the game and with the whole team together at the same time pursuing the same. And that means good structure, good intuitive actions, whether that from intuition the other players can react on it, yeah, not just from a structure, also from intuition, I'm a player and a coach who wants to have through the engagement to have a clear understanding about how we manage a match. So if now we have to take control, we take control. Now we have to attack, we attack. Now we have to force, we force. So to create this understanding, it's a challenge. Yeah, because the other team wants to do the same. Yeah, but this is how I want to see my team.
And how would this look in the training field, Santi? Yeah. What style? What would this look like? Maybe.
Look in a training. What for instance, in the first week of this season, I really, I hear a lot of people talking about the skills, about the basics. Yeah. And I'm also a trainer who looks to the basics. The only thing we have to realize that we have to integrate the basics in a context of a team. So if you, about, I see a lot of trainings who about the basics, but they are learning actually to stop a ball, not to receive a ball, which is the main difference. Stopping a ball is just, I don't even know what I will do next. Receiving the ball is about receiving towards the next action with an intention. Yeah, so for me, is about basic receiving, and receiving is about what I will do next, and what I will do next is about with who I have to connect. So, it's about integrating the pure basics, which is about stopping a ball, with the pre-scanning, with about the intention while receiving already from the first week. Because about stopping, it's really nice, but we don't create a player like this. So what I have to create in the first week of the preparation, after that long of no hockey, I already... doing everything with connecting. So every reception that they will make will be towards connection, you know? So starting with two against one, we start with more vertical two against ones from the center, just to create connection. And also from the defender to be aware of the spaces they have to close, the pressure they have to make, So that's a bit about the first week, about creating connection. And now about the second week, we will start about creating chaos in the sessions, whether we as a trainer, I have a new assistant this season, Simon Organ. So I was telling yesterday night, this week, with all small-sided games, it will be about creating chaos, throwing balls, because, you know, we realize we are playing hockey with the hands, with the legs, with the heart rate, and more physically, but mentally, this has to function. So if we are just training for our legs, for our hands, for our heart rate, and for our vision, but we are not training for this, in a preparation, we will not able to make the right decisions in the right moment in the competition. So second week is about creating more chaos in the sessions, where with ball possession, without ball possession, players have to be able to make more choices in a more speed, so that they start understanding and understanding better how they have to perform, because with really control one against one in the same position 10 times is good for the repetition. And maybe you have to have a refresh. But at some point, everyone against one, it's different. Everyone against one is different. Of course, you have to apply the same principles. How I approach the one against one, how I put pressure, and these kind of things. But at the end, everyone against one is different.
And Santi, just on the chaos thing, how do you pick out the clarity and maybe don't get lost from... It's very chaotic. There's a lot going on. How do you gain the clarity of what you want from it or what you want to see from the situations?
Yeah. Now, that is also a good point. Eh? That you need to have a clear understanding in how one against one is played. Yeah. From attack and defense perspective. And what we try to do is the moment with chaos. And playing, there has to be a moment of self-reflection, a moment that you stop the match of the exercise, a moment that that you let the players talk, yeah? Because there is a need. It's like physically, you need to work and you need to rest, yeah? Just hockeyly, you need to train and you need to reflect, yes? And this is how it goes. Yeah, without reflection, without the moment of understanding, without the moment of explanation, everyone we will train doesn't make sense. So, and now what you're trying to do is you are trying to use this weather to build up the moments of physically watering and rest, but also mentally and game sensing, so that they can share with each other. So I would say having the right ratio about training with chaos and checking whether the principles of one against one or two against one or a fast break principles are they understand that. And then you will see if whether they don't understand that or they are not able to execute it in that pace of the game. So it can be that everyone understand which are the principles of this, how we want to play one against one, but in a moment of chaos, a fast break, really that the pace of the game is really high, we are not able to execute. This is different. Problems of different situation that you have to approach differently.
And Santi, a question has just come through here, which from Panda, which I think is relevant to the situation we just spoke about. What have you noticed as major changes in personality and attitude of your players during COVID? And now they're back to this full training, they're in full preparation.
Yeah, that's a good one. The COVID period, it's a good one. Is actually it creates a lot of motivation with all the players to come back to the pitch. So this is really really interesting. The COVID period is different when you have a clear goal, when you have a program, when you have a date, I'm going to play that, and when you don't have that. So a COVID period when you don't know what's going to happen, killing, is a disaster. Players they don't have energy. They don't know what they have to do. It's difficult for them to go training. Training, I mean physically, yeah? It's really about just hockey. It's really challenging. When they have a goal, it's easy. We have to realize as a hockey player, if you look as a hockey player, we are, how do you say that in English? We have all the clarity, all the everything is arranged. We have a pitch, we have a clear goal in life, we have a coach who is saying what we have to do. We have everything. At one point in COVID, we are not at the pitch. We are any goal, physical goal that we have to score off defense. We don't have any goal. We don't have a game to play. We don't have a program of the week. And when you have done 2 weeks about assignments and a Zoom meetings, that's done, you know? So for a player, it is quite challenging. So you realize as a player how do you say that when you get everything in life and you don't have to do anything in life? How do you say that in English? That you are...
Granted. Granted, you looked after.
Yeah, you looked after. You know, you have everything. But you have also an umpire who is telling when it's wrong and when it's good. A coach, a watering, playing around you, players around you. And with COVID, is it not? I have a huge difference with there is a certainty where when we will play and we will not play. Of course, in a training, in really a COVID period with a lockdown, with a distance, you don't have contact. So it's really difficult to create the intensity for decision making. So, of course, you can be creative and you can achieve something, but it's nothing compared about playing against each other. So this is it depends. I have in the COVID period, I realized that you have robots and you have Darwins who can adapt really easy and who live easy with this context, and robots who needs a lot of security and routines. So these kind of players you have to manage different, you know? But further than this, I don't have now a bigger difference in this COVID period.
And Santa, does this look different maybe for the during the training for your players? Have you noticed difference in players? Because one example over here, we probably had a month of socially distanced training.
Yeah.
Now we're 7 weeks into the season and we haven't picked up a single card for any dreadful tackling.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a difference that we've seen because we haven't been able to tackle that. Now our players are approaching the ball differently. Is there anything you're seeing in that respect?
No, it is... yes and no, in a way. I don't know if it's through COVID, but you always, and at the beginning of the preparation, you always have... you want to put pressure on the opponent. Yeah, I want to put pressure. I want them to stress them out. And approaching one against one or having a press, you didn't really do it during COVID. So now, yesterday, for instance, during the match, I had two young players who I told them, now you did the press like theoretically to give a credit from your coach. Yeah. But I want more passion. I want more risk. I want more attitude, you know? And I don't know if it's from COVID or it's normal at the beginning of the preparation, which happen, always happens, to be able to go to the men without being overcommitted, you know, because otherwise then you are done. But it's clear that the social distancing has done something to us, but I must say that in Holland, how we lift the social distancing, and I've been in Spain this summer, it's completely different. In Spain, it's really strict, it's really different than in Holland.
And Santi, I'd like to just take a couple of questions from coaches. So one question from Bert here, what is the main difference in coaching Kampong Ladies to Amsterdam then? We've opened with a big question there, Santi.
It's a good question. Look, I would say there is no difference because in both you have different individuals, but of course men and women are different leagues, teams. You play different. For instance, in a man, everyone can scoop. In a woman, not that difference. Just I will go to the team, but in a game, when a team is on the midfield, they can put a scoop on the D. So if you are not aware as a defender, you can get a corner against because you are not in the distance. With the women's, you don't have that. You don't have that threat. Yes? For instance, just to name a bit, so the game is different. I as a team, I think that the focus of the women's team are you have longer that focus about maybe more listening or sticking to a common goal. Men like more competition. It's about to create a point system and to create something. The winning team do that and the loser team do that. You create already a spark in the training. With the woman, it's different. They want to make things good, and men want to compete more to have a big difference.
And Santi, do you think you've changed as a coach?
Yeah.
Maybe the philosophy stays the same, but is there differences that you've changed in your style from going from Kampong to Amsterdam?
Well, yes. For instance, from Kampong perspective, I would always in my training it was a moment to create feeling of success in the exercise. For instance, if with the girls of Kampong we will start at 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock in the morning, then I would we will start really low, and then we will increase the complexity of the training. Yeah, if it's girls or just Kampong, I don't know. I find that with that team was better like this. Or I would, or we will start also with music. The starting was a bit slower, but the ending was good. And with the boys of Amsterdam, they don't need that. They can start, it doesn't matter what time we start, high. Those are the things that I don't know if it's woman or men, but just working with these two teams, I had to do things differently because I saw that the team react in a better or in a different way.
We've got a question here from Nick Irvine. Is it possible to coach, develop the next Santi Frescher, Tendenoya, Shabazz, or Jamie Dwyer, or do we just have to wait for the second coming?
Well, we have to realize one thing, and that is the game has changed. So, of course, individual actions, because all the names I saw him are known through individual actions. Yes. So individual actions nowadays, I see less individual actions. Is there less? It become more with less time. Yeah. And actually more players. The physical capacity that you have, that you need in a team, is becoming bigger. The teams are fitter, the teams are professional, getting more professional. When I was playing in Beijing, our interchanging was with not that much of players. Of course, Argentina has won with also a slower rate of interchanging. So that doesn't mean anything, but still, when you see the trend says that the teams on top are physically amazingly. So, which means that to be able in that pace of the game to have the skills that Shabazz, Tendenoya, Jamie Dwyer had, and to make the difference from that, is becoming difficult. It's becoming difficult. And why always also when you look to, for instance, the last big tournament, that's the World Cup. The World Cup, the final of the World Cup, I mean, it has been, I didn't listen Shane and Max about it, but it was actually amazingly how defensively that was so much quality individually, but how defensively both teams neutralized themselves. It was amazing from a coach perspective. Maybe from a fan perspective is another discussion. Yes? But from a coach perspective, it was amazingly how they neutralized themselves. So I think that globalization, professionalization, the quality of the coaching, through the globalization, the knowledge has been spread out. So it's quite challenging now to have players who are able to break teams with their own actions. And so I think that yes, we have already players who are extremely well, but maybe they cannot show it all the matches and make the matches the difference all the matches, because nowadays the trend is to develop teams and not to develop players. And that is the trend. Now we are doing everything for the team. And before, I mean, if you look to football, Barcelona apart, because it's building up everything from Messi, yeah, football is happening the same. The best team is now Liverpool of matches, München nowadays, and they are performing really as a, I hear just team, München, Liverpool. I don't hear players, you know, and that comes because yeah, the level of knowledge and analysis has become so high that it's quite easy to neutralize individual actions.
And Santi, I suppose for the junior coaches, you know, I think to summarize that, to develop the individual within the team is massively important, and obviously something you're still doing at the top level, but even more important with those youth as well.
Yeah. Now, it's a key, eh? I mean, the trend is developing a team. It doesn't mean that it's good, because actually, when you are developing a team and you are forgetting the individual, you are forgetting individuals who can make the difference for the team, you know. And it is the paradigm that you have to make clear choices. You need a clear structure for the team, yeah. But you need a freedom of action in that structure. And what starts before the other one? And you have to keep feeding both. The structure of a team, the philosophy, the principles, everything which is the team, but not losing the individual point of view. And I think this is the paradigm that all the coaches are facing.
And Santi, from Kampong and Amsterdam, you've met a lot of youth into the team, a lot of youngsters. And what you see is common trends or attributes in those youngsters that are coming into the team as people, but, you know, mostly as hockey players. What are you seeing?
No, I will share now an example without saying names. I was in the training. I go to a young player and I said, really good. You steal 3 balls in this match. And he was surprised. He said, good? Is that good that I'm stealing 3 balls? And so, I mean, of course, maybe not, I don't know, but in my philosophy, when you steal the ball, you get again control and you can paint. So I want my forwards to be really aggressive. The best example is Xavi Leonard, how he steals from the blue side, how he runs the tackle back and everything. But with the young player, because why? My assumption is being as a team. Normally, it's been said, as a player, as a forward, you have to put pressure. They will, the midfielder, they will steal the ball. Yeah? It's also right. Yeah? It's not that it's wrong or right. But it's also to give the player the understanding that every situation is different, that from a more static, a more structured position, you have different roles in a press. And you have to put pressure and the other has to steal the ball. But when you are running a tackle back and you can put pressure to the midfielder or the defender and going from the blind side and steal the ball, is the best thing you can do. Because you steal the ball in a way that the other team is not structured, yes? And you gain ball position, you know? So this kind of conversation are really helping me to understand the player and how, which is the level or not the level, the understanding that they have of the game, to see which kind of influence I can be as a coach and which kind of knowledge of exercises of understanding I have to create to develop to make the next step.
And how much work, Santi, do you do with maybe the coaches below you in terms of age group that are working with those youth? Do they, are they quite interactive? Are they coming to see sessions?
Yeah, that is good. But nowadays, what we do, Ton Rohoff, which is still now training with us, but his focus is now his focus is more like not just with the first men's team, but he has the right mindset, so he's now training with us and everything. So he's now, for instance, in Amsterdam, the trainer of the A1, which is under 17. He's the trainer. He gives to the Herenveen once a week special training. Yeah. And he's also now also player of my team. So we have at this moment in Amsterdam really two players who has the possibility next year to make the big step. So we are close to see whether this big step we can make as smaller as possible. Yeah, and this is also talking to the players, getting them to know that the step they have to make is actually jump, and that we have we don't start next year to make that jump, but we start this year of before. And from this perspective, it's important for me as a head coach of my club to have really the coach of under 17, 18 really close to me. Yeah, because we can. When you are close to people, you get informal, formal discussions, whether you interact with each other. Yeah, when you are not close to people, yeah, now you have Zoom, so you can be close in another way. But you have the interaction has to be either formal and informal, and then you get really nice interaction. So I here. We tried in our boys line of our club to make the huge, huge jump, which is men's Hofklasse in Holland and youth. It's really big. So we tried to make it as smaller as possible so that the moment they have to make the step, they can do that.
And so there's a question here, and I think as a lot of coaches have listened to yourself, they'll be thinking, do I speak to my players enough? Am I worried about my players enough? Yeah. And one of the questions here from Clinton John Wynn has said, how can I move from being coach-centered to being more player-centered in my coaching?
Yeah, that is really interesting how you formulate the question. Yes? Yeah, because player-centered coaching, it doesn't mean that you have more contact. This is another thing. Player-centered is that you take into consideration the individual. Yes? Whether you make more contact or you make two conversations per week for a player, this is other thing. Yeah? And I think that it's player-centered coaching. First is... you have an idea of how you want to play, but if it doesn't fit in the qualities of your players, it will not work. So first of all, player-centered coaching, it's about using the strength, the interest, the talents of your players to make your system works. This is first thing, yes? And second of all, of course, the main tool we have when you believe and as a player-centered coaching is conversation. I would say converse action. Yeah, where you put the conversation into action. Yes, you are not there just to be like just to hear that about a player. You are there. To listen, so you are like a machine to action also back. Eh? So when you have converse actions with your players, then I think you are player-centered coaching, because you are using something which is coming from the player. You are filtering from your philosophy, your way of thinking, and you are helping them and using that knowledge that you have, that they have, to co-create and to have a new action. And you, there you have, of course, sometimes you are a player-centered coaching and everyone says, asking questions. Of course you have to ask, but sometimes you have to confront, sometimes you have to inspire, sometimes you have to hold on and stand by, just listen, let it be. So this is the tools you are using to really develop players inside and outside the pitch. I don't know if I'm answered the question, but otherwise John can say it to the chat. Yes.
And Santi, we always finish with one question. What would a 2020 coach of Santi say to the coach that began coaching at 16, 17? What do you reflect on and say to your younger self?
No, I will say to the starting Santi, it's a process. I would just make this this observation. It's a process, because I mean, your eagerness, your willingness to perform, the willingness to do it right, the willingness to see things happening that it's on your mind. For myself, it's the risk that I'm taking to not being that passionate enough or being stubborn to that idea. It's a process. And it's a, I'm saying to me, to my players, I don't use that word at all, because I understand that that a process, it's a coaching term. Player has to play, has to willing to win, has to willing to take risk and to gain control, is engaged. You know, we are the ones who are monitoring the process, and we are in a process. Of course, they are in a process, but by using process, I have the feeling that I misunderstanding with my players. Me, my experience.
I don't think I'm the only person, but on this call to one, just to see where you go and how exciting it is, but also for teams that you work with to where they end up. So. Yeah. Santi, thanks so much for your time and energy this morning. And yeah, super excited to see how Amsterdam go when the hoof cluster begins, hopefully sooner rather than later. Yeah. So thanks so much, Santi.
No, thanks a lot. Well done, Jack, for this breakfast with everyone and all the coaches. Have a good week. Set good goals, train with your heart, with your smile, and I hope this week will achieve what you want to achieve. And next week we will have Jack, we know that or not? Can we announce that?
We have a German person, that is all the clue we'll give away.
Nice.
And it'll be revealed very shortly.
Okay, nice. Yeah. Perfect. Then good luck.
Cheers, Santi. Cheers. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the European Hockey Federation podcast, presented the Coaching Lab, powered by Coach Logic and supported by FIH Academy. More episodes will be followed for Series 2 over the next few weeks. Follow European Hockey Federation on social media to keep in touch.